we're very data driven now. The whole marketing world is very data driven. So we'll look at things on a spreadsheet, in a report, in a dashboard. But I often find that nothing beats actually just talking to customers.
There are secrets out there, guys, performance marketing secrets, and knowing just one or two of them can absolutely light up your funnels. Let's go. This is the Revenue Driven CMO. I'm your host, Chris McKinnick. Join me as I uncover the secrets of the world's most elite CMOs and marketing leaders. The Revenue Driven CMO is sponsored by Web Mechanics, the AI-driven performance agency that makes you smarter. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another exciting episode of Revenue Driven CMO. I'm your man, Chris McKinnick. Have an awesome guest. Really, really excited to have her here on the show today. She's a results and data-driven global executive with a passion for B2B marketing and sales transformation. She has, get this, four times gone taking companies from startup to exit, including integrations, mergers and acquisitions, expansions, over 18 years of experience building high impact marketing orgs, generating leads, sales pipeline, industry awareness, and customer loyalty. She is a real visionary. She's, got some profound thoughts and ideas. She's a founding member at Chief, founding member at CMO Huddles, an advisor to Sendoso, which is a really cool brand, and now Chief Marketing Officer at Know Before, which is one of the world's largest security awareness training and simulated phishing platforms, which we use. I love the product. I love the brand. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show, Miss Cindy Zhao. How are you, Cindy?
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that, Chris. Gosh, that's definitely a humbling intro. I appreciate that.
Well, it's very true and very well deserved. And I know we've known each other for a long time, right? We're friends. We've been colleagues for many years. So I'm excited to finally have you on the show. And you know the format. You know how we roll. We like to lead with the value. Why don't you let everybody know, like, what is one of your biggest secrets to success?
Well, thank you for that, Chris. And I know when we were chatting about this, the first thing that came into my mind was customer empathy. And I know a lot of times people will say, put the customer at the center, start with the customer. I think a lot of times it really is hard to do, right? And for CMOs, you have to really kind of put a process in place and make it a part of you have to carve out time to focus on it. So a few things that I'll share with your audience and other CMOs and aspiring CMOs is that first is to really build true customer empathy. You have to start with actually listening to customer calls, talking to customers. And a lot of times it's easier said than done, but always start off, particularly if I join a company and it's a newer industry to me, I really want to take the time to understand the customer's motivations in that particular industry. So listening to sales calls, right? As many of these recorded calls on Gong and Chorus.ai, et cetera, listen to as many as you possibly can. Literally carve out 10, 15% of your initial onboarding time to do that and do it consistently, right? Because that really helps you build the understanding of not only your company, but the market, and also get into the mind of the customer. So that would be A. The second part is, after you collect some of that information, is actually go and talk to customers. You know, work with your sales team, your customer success team. Leverage existing calls that they may already have scheduled, like a quarterly check-in call. See if you can get introduced and hop on those, introduce yourself, really kind of start to build that connection with the customer. And then the third and the most important part is then taking all of this great intel that you just received from talking to customers and listening to calls, and you want to apply it into a storytelling framework. I personally love Donald Miller's Building a Story Brand. That's one example. There are other, different types of formats as well. But you really want to start thinking about, how do you now take all of this great learning and articulate it in your company messaging, et cetera. So I think that part is really important.
Brilliant. I love that. I've got several questions. You touched on some things and sparked some ideas as you were talking. Hey, exclusive for listeners of this podcast, Web Mechanics will do 10 to 20 hours of work for you for free. Literally no sales calls, no BS. Just give them a problem and they will put a team to work for you for free for 10 to 20 hours, even if you're already a client. If you're struggling with demand gen, lead gen, SEO, SEM, Google Ads, LinkedIn Ads, conversion optimization, if you can't get Facebook or Meta Ads to work for the life of you, or you can't figure out attribution, Web Mechanics will take a good hard look at whatever problem you give them, whatever programs you put in front of them, and they will give you an objective, informed opinion, plus some advice from 10 to 20 hours of senior level attention. So I would suggest take them up on this offer. It's ridiculous. Go to revenuedrivencmo.com/free, fill out the 2-minute form, and you will not regret it. Literally zero downside, unlimited potential for growth. So do yourself a favor, revenuedrivencmo.com/free, no hyphens, no punctuations. You will be happy about that decision. But I think it's really brilliant to first speak with the customers and then use their actual language to craft that story. I know that some marketers do it backwards. Like, they'll basically do market research. They might read some, reviews or do some reading. But we had a guest on not too long ago that was kind of griping that, hey, like she was actually more on the sales side and she was like, hey, the messages that the marketing team is using, like, you know, the value props are not really hitting. It wasn't really her topic, but it is a mistake that a lot of people make, I think. So I love that. And I was surprised. So 10 to 15% of the initial onboarding time sounds like a lot. I think that's way more than what most people do. I'm curious, this is sort of a tactical question, but like say that you're going into Gong or you're going into Chorus and you're looking for these calls. There's hundreds of them, right? Thousands of them potentially. How do you decide which ones to listen to? Like, where are you going first?
Absolutely. There's a few ways you can look at this, which is A, if you can correlate it to, let's say, deal size, and you want to get a good sampling of, depending on the market that your company sells to, I usually start off with a few things. So KnowBe4 has an incredible training onboarding program. They actually incorporate customer calls into part of it. So I would say even as a marketing team, if you can influence your, kind of internal enablement, training division, HR to include some of these like signature calls in your onboarding, do that, right? So KnowBe4 does that, which is awesome. If you don't have that, one of the things that you could do is while you talk to your sales and your customer success leaders is ask them like, hey, what was like the deal you were most proud of, last quarter or this past year? And then you could try to correlate it to deal size. Maybe it was a multi-year renewal, right? So those are all really good signals to kind of listen to and listen to those calls. The other side is you don't want to just overly indexed on the positive. Also, if you can, look at some of the key deals that you lost and look at, if those calls were recorded and see if you can pick up a couple of signals on the sort of why you've lost it. And I think a lot of times that win-loss, we're very data-driven now. The whole marketing world is very data-driven. So we'll look at things on a spreadsheet, in a report, in a dashboard. But I often find that it nothing beats actually just talking to customers. And there are customers that, I met 20 years ago at companies that are doing completely different things. And we're still friends and say hi and chat. And sometimes, they'll come along and to the next company I'm at. So a lot of times that relationship and building that bond is so important. But listening to those calls, I would look at those things, the top deals, the ones that you lost, and try to see if you can find any kind of common ground there. Like sometimes it could be the same thing that is both a positive and a negative, but then that becomes a thread you can pull on.
Mm-hmm. No, that makes a ton of sense. I'm curious, it's crossed my desk a couple times recently. There's firms that do like closed loss deal analysis where like they will call closed loss deals and I think it's incentivized. I think they offer the client, a $50 gift card or something to get that type of feedback. And their value prop or in their pitch, they're like, hey, when you call your customer, like they're going to pull some punches, you know, like they're, whether they're polite or for whatever reason, like they're not necessarily going to give you the whole deal. And, you know, the value prop of these firms that were pitching me was like, hey, you know, we'll get at the full story. Do you ever use a third party to do any of that? Or have you gotten the sense that when you're actually speaking one-on-one with somebody, that they are very open and willing to give you feedback even around some of the negatives?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it all comes from how you approach it. So Chris, to answer your question, I've definitely used those firms before. They're great, right? Because a lot of times you do want that sort of, it neutralizes it when you come from a third party perspective. They're not affiliated with the company. Certainly in my past at other companies, we use some of these firms and you get intel that you wouldn't have known otherwise, right? Like, again, this is love our sales reps, right? There's no knock on sales reps. There was one customer, I remember this very vividly. I mean, we lost a deal. They didn't share all the details with our sales rep, of course. But when the third party called, it was, well, your sales rep was on the phone the entire time and wasn't paying attention. And we just felt disrespected. You would not have gotten that from the company directly, right? The other way is, this is why I advocate for executives to do executive sponsorship of key deals. You know, I've personally done that before too, because then you're coming at it from a different angle. And so if I went and talked to the customer, I would ask questions in a you know, different way to kind of say, hey, we're really looking to improve and how your suggestions are so valuable to helping us improve. I know we weren't able to work together this time, but you never know in the future. And so it's all about how do you approach it? You never want to close that door because you just never know. You know, people move around a lot and companies change direction and you never know. Not a customer today could be your customer tomorrow.
Yeah. No, I hear that. And we see that all the time. You know, like we have clients that, you know, have bounced around and basically brought us along with them. So that's a really great point. Another tactical question, and I'm sorry to get in the weeds here. I'm just like, I want to go and do this. So like, I need to ask. So since AI has gone mainstream, you know, last year, all the the gongs and the choruses and the fireflies, they all have kind of different tools that they've put in, like call summaries and stuff. Have you found anything AI related to like more quickly ingest some of this information? Because like, you know, or are you listening like literally just playback style?
You could definitely do a few things. I definitely suggest that you want to take the time to truly listen to some of the calls. But again, I get it, especially us as executives, you don't have a lot of time to do that. So this is where the AI is so great, right? You can look at, for example, I was a Gong user for a very long time. You can actually see the time. How often is the seller talking versus the customer? And you always want to use that to go back to the coaching aspect of, you want your customer to be talking more, right? Are you cutting them off or what have you? Those are all the things to kind of look out for. But also taking these transcripts and not just using their AI, but you could put it on ChatGPT. We have an enterprise license at KnowBefore. We have our own AI portal being built. But even if for data privacy, right? You don't want to just throw it up on the regular ChatGPT, but on your own kind of, you know, enterprise version of it, or have your paid version of it, you can utilize that to analyze the sentiment as well. It just gives you another data point to look at. So again, you know, a lot of times you're listening to either the ones that are going really well or not so well, and you can pick up signals from that for sure. But yeah, use your own AI tools as well.
Yeah, we're Gong users as well, and I've liked some of their call summaries. They have like a short version, which is I think called the overview. Then they have an outline, which is much more detailed, which I've found some value in. I've been meaning to see on Gong whether or not you're able to search all calls broadly for certain keywords. I want to say you can.
Yeah, I know you can definitely search for keywords. There's actually a section where you can get the whole transcript. Now, just keep in mind, sometimes the transcript isn't going to be perfect, particularly in tech industry. We have so many acronyms that never like comes out 100% correct. And so you could look at that, right? That's why I mentioned cut, paste it, put it in, you know, your version of AI portal, ChatGPT, and you can fix those wordings and they can give you another lens on it.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And then to move on to the second part, or to the part where you're actually speaking one-on-one with customers, you mentioned trying to include it within an existing call, like maybe one of the onboarding calls or one of the, you know, quarterly check-in calls. How do you tend to frame those? Like, do you just say like, "Hey, I'm Cindy, I'm the CMO, and I wanted to meet you," or like, how do you frame them?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first thing is definitely never surprise the customer. Have your sales rep, customer success person, you know, I usually have like a little template blurb I've already pre-written. Basically, it's exactly what you just said. "Hi, I'm Cindy, I'm the CMO," right? It's either, "Hey, I've been here, you know, X amount of time," or "I just joined. I'd love to join this call," that you already have pre-scheduled, and just say hello and get to know you. And it's just as simple as that. And people just love that personal touch. I know that there are times where there was even one customer, this is a couple of months ago, no, before, they wrote in, they responded to an email we sent, because a lot of our emails come from our CEO, Stu, and Stu really reads them, right? I really read them as they come in. And the customer wrote, "Hey, Stu, I think you're too busy. You would never read this, but I wanted to give some feedback," and et cetera. And I personally responded. I said, "Hey, customer, don't worry. Like, Stu actually reads this, as do I." And they were like, "Wow, thank you for," I mean, they were just so kind of taken aback that it wasn't going into a you know, black hole, right, of email spam. And then, you know, we got to meet at our conference, and, you know, now it's like, I feel like I've done my own little part of customer loyalty. And that part is, you know, it means a lot to people. I mean, I know it means a lot to me when actually a customer success or an executive of one of our vendors, right, makes sure to take the time to say hello.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. No, I mean, that's a great personal touch. And I bet that client was definitely wowed that to get a personal response.
Yeah, and our CEO sent one too, so it was great. That's awesome. And we took care of the problem. That was it.
And then are there any like specific questions that you always ask that you find are like quite insightful or yeah, yield good feedback or good insights?
Yeah, I'll share with your audience on this one too. I think a lot of times if you just ask very general questions like, "How's it going?" most people just default to, "Oh, it's going great," or, you know, they're not really going to give you the insight that you want. So one of the questions I love to ask is, "Tell me about your day. You know, what is something that is taking so much of your time when you're using our product that you could just be, gosh, if it could only do X, what would that be?" And then you're getting to something really specific, and then they'll actually think and go, "Oh, you know, well, you know, blah, blah, blah takes up too much time." And then now you're like, okay, so, and keep in mind that then could become a data point that you use in your ROI study. So those are the kinds of, you know, questions that I like to ask. And, you know, you can get a lot of information and insight just by asking, like, what would you like to do to save time in your day?
Yeah, no, that's a really good one. Okay, so rounding this out, so you've now spent time listening, you've spent time speaking one-on-one with, you know, probably some number, I don't know if it's 5, 10, 15, whatever the number is. Now it's time to take everything that you heard, everything that you learn, and basically form that messaging, the narrative, the story. Do you have any technique specifically for that? Seems like AI would be really helpful for that.
Absolutely. Something like a ChatGPT AI portal to kind of help you synthesize that information and aggregate it is great. I mentioned earlier too, which I'm a big fan of, is building a story brand. You know, Donald Miller is a author of the book. I don't know if you're familiar with him too, Chris. He used to be a screenwriter for movies. And it's interesting, yeah, when you start to look at any, it will kind of ruin movies for you because you'll notice like every movie kind of follows this arc. But it's a book. It's a very easy read. Like, I highly recommend it. My whole team at a couple companies, we've kind of made it something where my whole team would read it. I also made it something where to my whole entire marketing org at Know Before, I said, you know, go get the book. You know, you can reimburse it as part of your education training stipend, right? And really understand it, because you could see there's like a seven step framework on how to then kind of tie all of this together in a storytelling framework. But by the way, there's something else I failed to mention too. I want to make sure it's communicated to your audience is the CMO doing the customer, like listening to customer calls, talking to customers, super important, but also encourage your teams to do that, right? It shouldn't be just your team that works on webinars that, you know, because they get the front row seat to it. Encourage your, I don't care if it's your creative person, your PR person, your demand gen, field marketing, right? It's they should all have some type of customer connection. And even if it is just listening to the webinars, the calls, et cetera, that all helps them kind of understand. I think a lot of times marketers, we tend to just be really, because there's so much, right? Usually marketing is understaffed and we're just trying to do so much. You become very focused on what you're doing, but also to take a moment to step out of that box and to really look at, like, okay, you have to, number one, connect with the customer to be a great marketer. And so really encourage your teams to do that as well. But yeah, try this story brand framework. It's really phenomenal.
I'll definitely check that out. I've heard of it. I've never read it. But I've heard about it several times, so I will pick that up for sure.
Awesome.
Cool. Well, let's talk about Know Before. Like I mentioned, we're users of the product, lovers of the product. I'm a master at sniffing out phishing attempts. Like, there's Love no it. Way anybody's ever going to fish me ever.
Chris is like, we are going to be super secure at Web Mechanics.
My goodness.
I love it.
Yeah, no, but I just think it's such an awesome product and so clever and well done. But for folks that aren't as familiar, could you give us just a little background, like what you guys are all about?
Yeah, I'd love to. So Know Before, we are the world's largest platform for security awareness training, which is also now known as the human risk management market, and for anti-phishing. So we have a series of software. Not only does it help to train and educate and inform your workforce, so it could be your freelancers, your employees, et cetera, to not fall for these scams, but it's also, we have a product that actually can aggregate your email and actually see, like, oh, these are, you know, malicious emails, rip them out. You can even flip them to use them in your company as a, you know, a phishing simulation test, right, to your employees and workforce. But also it has a crowdsource component. So all the other customers of this product called PhishER Plus, it will actually take that email out of their inbox as well. So it's something where it builds a community sense of you can help each other out by, hey, you're spotting this one malicious email. It actually could be going out to 10,000 other companies as well. Our CEO, Stu Schauerman, he's just brilliant. He started this company, created this market from scratch. You know, he had an antivirus software company prior to this called Sunbelt Software. He sold it. And he said to me on my first call with him, he said, Cindy, it could take 3 months for a hacker to hack into a network, but it only takes 3 minutes to hack a human. And if you look at some of those biggest kind of news stories last year of hacks with, like, you know, the casinos, right? You know, Clorox, et cetera, those all started with social engineering. So having people kind of be really aware of, you know, this email, maybe call your bank, don't click on the email, right? Like, be a little suspicious. There's a term, it says, be hyper aware. And just a little tad of like suspicion is a good thing.
Yeah. And I mean, for anybody that's not hyper aware, I think it's dangerous because we get so many like attempts, like on a daily basis, yep. Real attempts. And so what we do is basically our head of IT will, you know, send these out. And I always spot them now. I fell for them a couple times, but now I always spot them and I'll screen grab it and I'll be like, try again, buddy. Like, not good enough. I'll just send it to them in Slack. But then anybody that does click, he'll then go and basically do some training or reinforce that training or what have you. So I feel grateful and happy that we are pretty ironclad. But I'm worried for like the vast majority of companies out there, especially ones that may not be so tech savvy. It's like these messages are probably hitting inboxes right now. It's kind of scary.
Oh, 100%. And it's not just, this is the scary part, right? Which is why I know before I'm so proud of this company. We were always staying in the forefront. Chris, there was a headline just a few weeks ago, real story. There was a company in Hong Kong where the person in the finance department thought, this is kind of like a suspicious email, didn't engage. They were able to deep fake an entire Zoom call with the CFO, right? All they do is they can grab images and voice clippings online and create their own deep fake. And so he was on a Zoom call and then wired $25 million out of the company. So this is the part you have to, and again, he was suspicious, right? He was, you know, sufficiently paranoid enough to ask for a Zoom call. But a lot of times I think when in doubt, it could be from the phone, could be, et cetera. Hang up, right? Don't engage. Look for the real company and call them back. There's nothing wrong with it. No one is going to be offended if you're like, hey, you know, I'm going to call you back, or, you know, just do that. It's just an extra layer of protection. It is, it's just gotten so sophisticated now, the bad actors, that it's going to be more and more difficult to spot them. And so we're trying to stay ahead of all that, so that we can help our customers.
Yeah. And I know you haven't been there for too long, or going on
almost eight months,
going on, or almost a year, or pushing a year. What are some things that you're really proud of, or like any like win stories, or brag worthy moments? I see you guys are doing a ton of stuff on LinkedIn.
Yeah, I'm super proud of the team. I feel like this is just definitely one of the best marketing teams I've had the pleasure of leading, and I'm so proud of my team. I just want to give a couple shout outs on this too. So we actually know before just won in the last G2 releases. We were the fourth ranked top SaaS software company, leading in reviews. And so that is, we're in company of like HubSpot and Sprout Social and some of these amazing companies that I'm so proud of, right? And it really is going back to this whole message of customer empathy and really deeply connecting with the customer. You know, I have a team of great folks, you know, like Lily Borges, you know, Lori Haynes, you know, Colin Beasley. They're all working so closely with customers, and particularly Lily is our customer marketing manager. She's the one working all of these, you know, customer reviews and engagement with the customers, and then webinars, right? Our webinar team is amazing. We also have this great group of industry evangelists. Some of them are ex-practitioners or ex-industry analysts, and they actually are out there doing a lot of security education and awareness to help us spread the message. And I think all of these elements combined, we end up with great customer engagement and thus, you know, being really, really honored to win all these prestigious awards from like G2 to best places to work and all of that. We have an amazing culture team. They're called, we call them like the shenanigans team. It's like they just do all these kind of fun things across the company to make it fun and engaging. So it just really is a great workplace. I'm loving it.
That is awesome. Well, golf clap right there. That's amazing. I mean, I can tell, you know, from the outside looking in, like you can tell when you see a great company and you guys are solving a real problem in the world, a real expensive and painful problem.
Yeah.
So kudos 100%. To you, and I'm happy for your success.
Oh, well, thank you to my team. It's all about them.
Love it. Cool. Well, okay, let's talk marketing a little bit. So when it sounds like you're doing a lot of stuff, right? Like you've got the customer marketing, you got the webinars, you've got events and awards and things that you're winning. What would you say are the top drivers, like the top revenue drivers for you?
Yeah, absolutely. So the company, I'll share a little bit of like past and present, right? There is there used to be this really big emphasis and focus on really what we in the marketing world would look at as like raw leads. You know, it's the just how much activity, how many leads are coming in. And we're doing a shift to really focus on pipeline. So how much pipeline is this creating? How many opportunities are being created as a result? So if you think about it, it's a little bit of a shift for the marketing team, you know, over the course of the last 10 years to go from being more kind of volume and quantity driven to being quality driven. And so that's that is, it's really interesting, right? Because it's sort of needs to be a whole shift from the whole company and not just the marketing team. Because you ask any marketer, like, yeah, we know, like, we got to care about pipeline, but it's also it's not just about the number of leads. It takes a little bit of education across the company. So that is something that we're really focused on. And then when you look at what is actually driving the opportunities, right? A lot of it is, in the past, we would, and again, I think this is very common. You would do events because you just sort of like, oh, every year we always go to this one. But it's actually looking at it with a critical lens and saying, are you actually getting any kind of, not only leads, there are certain events you have to do for brand, right? But are you getting that brand value? Are you getting that lead, in pipeline value to make those decisions? I think that is something where to be a very revenue-driven marketing team, that's something you have to always look at and question, right? And sometimes, you know, you'll get the request like, hey, I need to be there because, you know, my one customer is there. Well, is that a really good use of like $10,000 or $15,000 for, like, how big is that, right? You have to kind of do that kind of math and the balance of ROI to be truly revenue-driven. And then also don't over pivot on any one particular channel. Sometimes I've seen companies, they spend a lot, because events are expensive, right? Spend a lot on events, but can you get similar ROI with a very low cost digital event? You know, maybe just hire a great speaker and you have a great webinar.
So like take that event budget, which might be $100,000, take half of it and you could probably get a pretty good speaker to come hang out with you for an hour.
That might get you, you know, thousands of leads, more so, more bang for your buck than doing a conference, as an example.
Speaking of online events, so I come from, my origins were in B2C. Mm-hmm. I was actually an affiliate marketer, and affiliate marketers have a lot of like useful techniques that I love taking some of the stuff that they're doing on B2C and direct response and translating it for B2B. One thing that they do is what they call VSLs, or video sales letter, which is like a fairly long form video. And you've probably seen a lot of the publishers doing this. Like a lot of these publishers, the newsletter publishers will create these like hour long videos, like it's the death of the dollar, you know, but like really kind of, you know, those ones are blown way out of proportion. But we had this idea to do a video sales letter, and what it looked like was basically like a really valuable piece of content, educational on the front end, and then basically like a sales pitch at the back end. So we had this thought, this was for ourselves, not too long ago. We've always done like, hey, download this white paper and we'll get we'll get downloads basically for $20, $30, $40 per download, but they don't convert into deals at a very high rate. So we ran this, the cost per lead was like in the hundreds. It was like, so we ended up pausing it after like $5,000 or so spend. But lo and behold, one of those leads became a deal, which was like a, you know, six-figure deal.
Wow.
And not only that, but like when they reached out, they basically, the topic of the webinar was how to train robots. It was like basically how to use the AI built into Google to get better leads. So they called in and they were like, I need help training robots. Like they had already watched it. They'd already been sold on the methodology. It was the easiest sale we'd ever made because, like, you know, they were already pre-sold. So we turned that back on, of course. And it's, you know, it's still generating really good pipeline. So that is
a
testament to like what you're saying is like, hey, it's not so much about quantity, it's really about quality.
Yeah. And if you ring fence that to, right, because, you know, for example, like Web Mechanics, you do great with tech companies, and you ring fence that, right, to your audience, your desired audience, you know, the title level, etc. I gotta say, Chris, I'm getting some pretty good emails from you guys too. They're very well personalized, right? So I love video. I totally agree with you. It's I've never used it, but I've always kind of appreciated when I receive some emails and you can see those quote personalized videos done by Vidyard. I think they're kind of fun, right? Like they actually hold up the sign, they got your name on it, all that stuff. I feel like that's now with AI, we can do even more like hyper personalization like that. So I think it's a lot of fun. And people just in general, we're living in this TikTok generation of, you know, 30-second videos. I don't know, if you might be, this is, I'm dating myself here, but years and years, like, or maybe a decade ago, there used to be a whole thing called the 2-minute explainer. And it was all about, can you explain your company and your product within 2 minutes? Now we're living in the era of 30 seconds. 2 minutes is too long. So all of those like short form videos, I told the team too, I want to do more experimentation there on that side at Nobody Four.
Yeah, definitely. Short form video is very hot. I will say. There's so many different like thoughts and ideas going through my mind. I wish we had a whole extra hour. But
I just love talking to you.
I want to tell you about one other thing that I've been obsessed with lately that I think the audience will enjoy too. It's a tool. It's called RB2B, like the letter R and then B2B. It's a person level visitor identification. So like within your Zoom info or your Sixth Sense, it will tell you what companies are visiting. This is a person level. So it shows you the actual individual. And what I love about it is that it's free. So if you use Slack or Teams, you can basically push it in real time to a Slack channel. So that's what we're doing. They have a paid version, like if you want to push it to HubSpot or, you know, your CRM or something.
Sending it to my team.
Version. I think it's $500 a month.
Okay.
But we don't even use the paid version. We just use the free version and have already gotten, like we just started using it a couple of weeks ago and have already gotten like 3 or 4 opportunities. We basically, yeah, there's like, you know, the sales and marketing team basically monitors it. Anytime somebody that we know comes through or, you know, or just like somebody that we don't know that looks interesting, basically we'll like wait, you know, 24 hours or so and then reach out to them. But it's already been very, very helpful.
I'm going to go look into this. I just took it down so I don't forget.
Yeah. I hope so. I love it. It's a great product.
So fun.
All right, cool. Well, enough of the nerding out. Let's get out of the weeds a little bit here.
Yeah, we got like 2 marketing tech fans here. We're going to we could talk about tech stack and software all day.
I know, right? Cool. Well, it sounds like you guys are doing a lot of things well. I'm very impressed all around. But I know it's not all wine and roses. What are some of the big challenges that you guys are facing right now?
Yeah, for sure. It's, you know, one of the things I mentioned earlier is these hackers are getting more and more sophisticated. So definitely there's a lot of new kind of emphasis and development at the Know Before side, like through our R&D, through our product kind of innovation to do more as well with AI. Because the more we do, the better we can help our customers and then also make their lives easier, right? Like that time savings element. We announced at our last customer conference, ADA, which stands for Artificial Intelligence Defense Agents, plural. And from that, our customers will be able to just quickly, versus them trying to pick and choose phishing templates, you can look at the individual, like your workforce, the users, you know, kind of issues, what are they clicking, and then devise through AI templates for them. So a lot of this is taking a lot of work. I wouldn't say it's a challenge necessarily. It's just more of a focus for the company on staying ahead of these bad actors and threat actors. On the marketing side, I mentioned earlier too, this whole kind of shifting the mindset of the company from looking at raw leads to really understanding and looking at pipeline contribution, et cetera. It's just something where, you know, we're a good sized company, right? 1800 employees. It's going to take a little bit of time to kind of help people go, oh, I see what the why we're doing this. And so some of that change. And we're also just as a company, right? We've went through a very big kind of GTM redesign project, which is really, you know, kind of meaningful on really looking at our segmentation of our market and all that good stuff. So these are all things that you know, not necessarily challenges, like, but they're big boulders to move. Though we're knee deep in it.
Well, it is definitely a challenge, I would say, like shifting the mindset of an org from just like number of net new leads down to pipeline, incredibly important. But certainly possible. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. You know, it's totally. It can be tough in B2B because like the attribution challenge is just a nightmare, you know, mm-hmm. like attribution is hard even in e-com or even in like some B2C spaces with short selling cycles. Like there's an attribution challenge, but in B2B, it's like the attribution crazy challenge. I wish I had a better word for like a very challenging challenge, but it's like, you know, the hardest challenge possible, you know, because like, you could get a lead that becomes a deal that originated from an event that you went to 2 years yeah. ago yeah. and they just clicked on one of your LinkedIn ads yesterday. Right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so like, you know, that has to be part of the conversation. Like when you're shifting the mentality in the B2C side of things, they do like incrementality studies, like geo holdouts, for instance. Like we had a client that wanted to test YouTube, and mm-hmm. they advertise everywhere. Like they're on TV, they're spending millions on Facebook, they're on TikTok, they're doing everything, right? So we launched YouTube. It was going pretty well. The leads that were coming from there were pretty high quality, but they always ask about incrementality. It's like, hey, would we have gotten these leads anyway? Is the question.
Oh.
So we did a geo holdout.
Yeah.
And it turned out not only were the leads incremental, but they were incremental like 2x, like meaning that what we were seeing in platform, the truth was actually much better than what we were seeing mm-hmm. in platform. Mm-hmm. So they do that kind of thing. And they also do media mix models where like they start from the closed won deals and then they look at like the media mix that was happening during that time and model out how much you should be spending on these different areas. But it's really hard to do that in the B2B world just because the volume is not there. You know, like these are companies that are closing thousands of new customers a month, you know, so it's easier to yeah. make those models.
Oh, attribution, Chris. We could do probably a whole episode just on attribution because of all the companies I've been a part of, everyone tries to do it a little bit differently, right? Some companies are, and again, it's not because companies that don't want to do multi-touch. I think every company knows like there's value in multi-touch and want to do it, but sometimes you just end up with system limitations, you know, depending on how your CRM was set up and how your marketing automation was set up and the integration there, that there's always data challenges there. And you're right. It's depending on your sales cycle. You know, if you're selling a product that's like multi hundreds of thousands to $1 million, you know, ASP, average sales price, then you could be looking at a 2 to 3 year sales cycle, or you're selling to the government, right? We all know being DCers how hard and how long those sales cycles are. So a lot of times it's, yeah, you have to look at kind of, if you can look at multi-touch, then that's the best. But yeah, for B2B, it's just every company I've been at, it's always been a question and a challenge and a debate and a good discussion on how should we look at it. So I'm with you there. We'll just keep fighting the good fight.
Yeah. You know, we're partners with this firm called Tomi AI, which is basically like a predictive, it's like predictive, where they can predict with a pretty high degree of accuracy just from the first couple of interactions on a website, like what the value of that lead will be. And we use it primarily to like build modeled audiences to target in mm-hmm. paid ads. But I could see a use case like for attribution where like once you're comfortable with the model and the, you know, the relative accuracy of the model, then maybe everybody just eventually gives up on exact attribution. It's like, hey, we're never going to figure this out. Let's just build a model that we have some confidence in and then thereby like score and assign value to these leads based on those interactions in the very early pipeline. I think that might be where people ultimately end up going in B2B.
Yeah. I mean, you have some of these models in ABM products like Sixth Sense and, you know, Demand Base and et cetera too. I'm with you there. It's more about the, what's the quality of the engagement, right? Going back to that, you know, kind of customer empathy, customer engagement. I think a lot of times I found this a lot too in enterprise B2B is that the buyer, the true kind of person that's buying and signing off isn't the person doing all the research, right? They're sending their team to do the research. And so some of that is, can you cross correlate it to the persona as well? And then you can score it accordingly as well. But yeah, there's, I feel like I'm with you there. There's going to be a point in time where it's like, okay, are we just going into data overload? And maybe we're just missing the very simple parts of just how much engagement has there been, right? Forget about everything else.
Have you found the propensity modeling in Sixth Sense and Demand Base to be pretty good? I haven't really messed around with it much.
Yeah, I haven't been a user of Demand Base. Sixth Sense, yes, customer from two different companies. And I definitely find that the sellers and the sales teams, they find it very, very useful, right? Because it is a signal. You could debate accuracy, et cetera, because a lot of times the data now with the whole kind of cookie issue, et cetera, like how good is the data? But overall to say, hey, this company seems like there's some heat going on, that they're looking at this category, I do find that to be helpful.
Okay, cool. I like that. All right, Cindy, well, I know you're a very busy woman. I know you've got an event to go to do after this. So let's do a lightning round and we'll get you out of here.
Love it. I love lightning round. Go for it.
Here we go. If you were to start a side hustle, what side hustle would that be?
So I personally love personal finance. You know, just I think that there should be some great education for young people on how to invest, right? And how to budget and, you know, right? So I personally love that stuff. I've been a fan of it since I was younger and I found it to be helpful. So I probably would start something like that, like a blog or a website, just kind of do basic financial, you know, education for folks.
Like youngsmartmoney.com or something.
Something like that. You know, it was really fun. I love reading that stuff and maybe like a TikTok channel doing that. I'm not there yet. That would be a good side hustle.
That's awesome. I love that. Question number two is top three books or authors or influencers that have made an impact on you.
Yeah, I have an oldie but a goodie that I'll recommend to everyone to Jack Welch's Winning. So Jack Welch, former CEO of GE. Him and his wife wrote that book. I find myself just oftentimes picking it up and rereading certain chapters. So that one's a great one. I talked about Donald Miller, Building a Story Brand. I'd recommend that. This is my latest one, and I'll hold it up for your audience that's actually watching the video. And it's Amy Sue's The Leader You Want to Be. You know, definitely the book talks a lot about as you grow in your career, that your leadership style, right, and how you lead, the stakes are higher, and how you can, there's some really, really great suggestions on how you can deal with that as a leader to kind of help yourself. And so I highly recommend this to your CMOs and aspiring CMOs.
Love that. Okay, perfect. Well, this has been awesome. I'm leaving inspired. I think go consume some of your other content and check out, you know, some of the things that you're doing. And I've really enjoyed it. So thank you for coming on.
Well, thank you, Chris. You gave me some great ideas too. Yeah. I'm going to immediately talk to my team about RB2B. And you said Tony, what is the one?
Tomi. T-O-M-I, like M like Mary.
Tomi. Yeah. I love that. We're going to go talk to, I'm going to go talk to my team about Tomi. So thank you. I learned so much from you.
Cool. Well, absolutely. For everybody listening, if you learned anything here today or if you enjoyed this, share this with a friend or drop us a 5-star review wherever you get your pods. We really appreciate that. Cindy, for folks listening that would like to learn more about you or know before, where would you direct them?
Oh, absolutely. Connect with me on LinkedIn. Cindy Zhou, Z-H-O-U. I'm on Twitter as well, Cindy Y-Z-1. You can find me there, or X now, I should say, on X. And also knowbefore.com. Come learn a little bit more about what we do. We also have a free TV series. We're called The Inside Man. Ooh. It's very, very cool. So if you are not a customer and you want to do some security education and do it in a TV show style, come watch The Inside Man. We're filming our latest season and more to come on
that's
that.
That's awesome. I'll certainly check that out.
Yeah, I'll send you the link, Chris. You enjoy it.
Awesome. Cool. We'll stay on the line just 1 second, Cindy. We'll wrap up. But for everybody else, that was another exciting episode of Revenue Driven CMO, and we'll see you next time.
And that's a wrap. Thanks for joining us here today. For show notes and other episodes, visit us at revenuedrivencmo.com. That's revenuedrivencmo.com. And hey, exclusive for listeners of this podcast, Web Mechanics will do 10 to 20 hours of work for you for free. Literally no sales calls, no BS. Just give them a problem and they will put a team to work for you for free for 10 to 20 hours. Even if you're already a client, if you're struggling with demand gen, lead gen, SEO, SEM, Google Ads, LinkedIn Ads, conversion optimization, if you can't get Facebook or Meta Ads to work for the life of you, or you can't figure out attribution, Web Mechanics will take a good hard look at whatever problem you give them, whatever programs you put in front of them, and they will give you an objective, informed opinion, plus some advice from 10 to 20 hours of senior level attention. And that's just because you're a listener of this podcast. So I would suggest take them up on this offer. It's ridiculous. Go to revenuedrivencmo.com/free, fill out the 2-minute form, and you will not regret it. Literally zero downside, unlimited potential for growth. So do yourself a favor, revenuedrivencmo.com/free, no hyphens, no punctuations. You will be happy about that decision.